Hello, everyone. Fantasy Crossover Podcast here. I am your host, Danny Duarte, joined by my co-host, Brian Acevedo. And today, guys, we are about to give you guys our conference finals preview or playoff matchup review. But before we get to it, Brian and I haven't discussed yet live Game 7 reactions. We had Bucks Celtics, Suns versus Mavs. Definitely two great Game 7s. Well, great in different senses. Brian, what are your thoughts on both of these games?
Yeah, so for Mavs Suns, we definitely had an interesting Game 7. To me, it was pretty much over in the first quarter. The Mavs were up like 20 points. To me, it was definitely one of the strangest Game 7s I've ever seen, to have the number one overall seed in the playoffs at home in a Game 7, basically get blown out in the first quarter. It just felt like Luka kept hitting daggers, and he basically took the Suns' heart right out of their chest. And while obviously I give a ton of credit to Luka and his performance in Game 7, to me, I think the performances that were really slept on were Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie. Those two guys, looking back on this, you know, 20 years from now, people are going to remember the Luka performance. They're going to remember the Game 7 blowout, but I think it's going to kind of go under the radar how good these two played offensively, and obviously the type of energy that the rest of the defense provided. Dallas played really well, man. This wasn't just, you know, obviously Phoenix did not come with it in Game 7, but we got to give Dallas a lot of props. It takes balls to go in there Game 7 on the road and come out the way that they did. Just really, really tip my cap to them. They look like a legitimate contender at this point, which I don't think a lot of us really thought about, Dan. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I think that a lot of this is going to fall on the shoulders of the supporting cast for the Mavericks. You know, when we first saw the Porzingis trade, I think everyone was skeptical. I think everyone thought that they had made a mistake trading Porzingis for Dinwiddie and Bertans. Brian, in hindsight, that might have been a steal with how well Spencer Dinwiddie has been playing. And we have to apologize to Spencer Dinwiddie on air because we have underestimated him and his ability, given his injuries and how his performance was in Washington. Guy is just a flat out completely different player. But to your point, I think a lot of the credit also has to go to just Dallas as a whole, specifically Jason Kidd, the coaching schematics that they have. And, you know, I think Dallas is going to give Golden State a run for their money. I don't think it's going to be as much of a blowout or a wash for the Golden State Warriors as people believe it will be.
Yeah, I think the Game 7 has opened up a lot of people's eyes about Dallas and Dinwiddie, including myself. With Dinwiddie, I still want to see more consistency in that regard. To me, if you're going to be the second, third best player with Luka Doncic, I mean, hey, sometimes there's superstars out there that play at their best without other stars. I mean, we saw it with Dirk Nowitzki. He didn't really have another star on that Mavericks team that won the chip, and they just seemed to align a team pretty well around him. So that's going to be interesting. But Dan, the team that I think a lot of people want to see is going to happen is the Phoenix Suns. I mean, Chris Paul just signed an extension last year, long term. He's 37 years old now. Devin Booker came out and basically laid an egg in a really important Game 7. Where do they go from here? They got DeAndre Ayton's contract situation kind of up in the air. There's a lot of question marks to me about the Suns, and I don't know. It just kind of feels like their championship window, so to speak, has kind of shrunk a little bit.
Would you give DeAndre Ayton a max contract?
It's tough. I think you kind of have to, especially where you're at with the Suns, unless the loophole that I brought about on Twitter with some of our followers is, could they sign and trade DeAndre Ayton? Try maybe get like another wing player? Because I think what the Suns have struggled with is another playmaker, or not playmaker, more of a shot creator alongside Devin Booker. Like, they need someone who can get in the paint at will, draw fouls on top of those guys, because Chris Paul played pretty passive. Maybe that's the type of move they need to do instead of just paying him directly. What do you think?
I disagree with you. I don't think they need another wing. I think what they need is a big man that is more defensive anchor minded than DeAndre Ayton. DeAndre Ayton isn't a defensive specialist by any stretch of the imagination. His game is heavily predicated on kind of being an offensive players, one that can spot up and shoot, but we don't really hear a lot of DeAndre in defensive specialties. If I were them, I would go in and make a sign and trade, to your point. Guess who I would sign, though? Get like what team I would go for if I were them?
Who?
The Portland Trail Blazers.
Oh, yeah. I saw that rumor.
you get back Yusuf Nurkic and maybe another one of those rebuilding pieces, maybe a Justice Winslow if they like what he has, or maybe a Keon Johnson, and you pair DeAndre Ayton with Damian Lillard, I think that's a pretty good match, man. And I know Dame likes it, so why not?
I think it's a great move for Portland. I don't know if I love it for Phoenix still. I think Nurkic is still a little too injury prone for where Phoenix is at. I think they need a for sure thing, at least more so if you're going to trade away the number one pick from just a couple of years ago and assign a trade. I would want more personally, but
they don't believe in him, right? Like they ultimately
they don't enough to give him a max contract, but I think the Suns still see his value enough more so than to get just Nurkic back.
That's why I said Nurkic in pieces, right? Like, ultimately, you get Nurkic back, who isn't a max salaried center by any stretch of the imagination, and you get a couple pieces back here and there to give you some options to like, play around with. I just think that, ultimately, Nurkic fits what they should be doing a little bit more. That's all.
Yeah, we should put that one on social media. We'll put that one up on Twitter as a poll and see. I'm curious to see what others think about that one. I haven't heard about the Nurkic. I did hear about the Portland connection, but we'll see. It's going to be an interesting summer for the Suns, though, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Brian. So let's shift focus on the Warriors. Obviously, they beat out Ja Morant, you know, and the Memphis Grizzlies. Well, the Ja Morant-less Memphis Grizzlies at this point. What are your thoughts in general on the Warriors going into the conference finals? They are favored to beat the Mavs by quite a bit, even though I think you and I can both agree the Mavs do have the best player left in the playoffs at this point. So what are your thoughts for the Warriors moving forward?
Yeah, I definitely think the Mavs do have the best player left in the series, not in this series, in the playoffs. And that's no disrespect to Steph Curry. The one thing with Steph Curry, as we all know, he's kind of the heartbeat of this Warriors team. He shot 32% from three in the last series, Dan. He has definitely cooled off quite a bit since he passed the Ray Allen record. So we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. They obviously have the championship experience. My concern is Klay Thompson defensively. How is he going to look? Can Andrew Wiggins try to stay in front of Luka Doncic as much as possible? We all know Draymond's going to take a couple turns at defending him. It's really going to be a group effort from the Warriors, I think, to try and limit Luka as much as possible. I think ultimately, though, I think what Steve Kerr is going to understand is, hey, Luka's going to get his. Let's do our best to contain everybody else. I think that's always a sound strategy when you're playing up against a superstar like this. But I do think the Warriors, obviously, with their championship experience, should be favored, but I do think it's going to be a closer series than a lot of folks out there are probably thinking.
What's your preview?
I would say Warriors in, is it six? Honestly, I got Warriors in seven.
I got Mavs in seven. So let's go. Let's
wow, wait. Wow, you're predicting the upset.
I don't think it's much of an upset, man. I mean, they clearly have the best player left in the playoffs, and one thing that no one's giving them enough credit for is their defense, that tenacity that they can get, like, you know, do multiple switches. They can get around screens. I think they're going to give the Warriors a run for their money, and I believe in Luka Doncic at this point.
Look, Luka averaged 31.5 per game against the Warriors in the regular season. He's definitely going to get his buckets. For those of you guys on Prize Picks, I would definitely encourage you to smash the over on Luka's points for the rest of the series and probably rebounds too.
No doubt. All right, Brian. So let's pivot on to the other game seven that happened in the Eastern Conference. The Bucks versus the Celtics. Story of the night was Grant Williams. Seven made threes. He actually beat a record set by Steph Curry for the most three-pointers made in a game seven in the playoffs. What are your general thoughts now that they kind of took down the defending champs and are moving on to play the Heat?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Budenholzer's strategy for the Bucks, unfortunately, completely backfired in their face. Obviously, their strategy was, let's let Grant Williams and Derek White take a bunch of shots from three. And some days, most days, you live with it. But unfortunately, he kind of burned you on Sunday. I think it's actually going to be a pretty interesting series, Heat-Celtics. I want to get your thoughts, though, first, Dan.
With regards to game seven or the series matchup? Sorry.
No, the series matchups, because I do want to get into the Bucks, but I do want to hear first what your thoughts are on Heat Celtics.
Well, we're recording prior to game one, and as of this recording, We know that Al Horford's out due to health and safety protocols. Definitely curious to know the details and the extent behind that. And also Marcus Smart is out due to a mid-foot sprain. But we also have Kyle Lowry out due to a hamstring injury. I think that this hampers the Celtics a lot more than it hampers the Heat. The Heat are actually 6-0 without Kyle Lowry, which is a crazy stat to put out there. But, man, I have to ride with my team. I think that ultimately – Ime Udoka is a great head coach. I think he definitely got overlooked for coach of the year, given all the great coaching candidates that there were this year. But I give the coaching edge slightly to Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat organization. And overall, I just like the team build of the Heat a little bit more. But I will say it's nerve-wracking. I definitely think that the matchup with the Celtics is a lot less favorable than Giannis, given the big wings that they have. And the Heat just need to find their rhythm, man. They need to find their rhythm and shoot and follow the stroke. I could see it going either way, but I got the Heat in seven.
Wow. I could see that definitely being an outcome. Personally, I have the Heat losing this series, Dan. I have the Celtics winning in seven, actually. I think it's going to go down to the wire. I think the Celtics are just going to pull it out. I will say, though, I think the Heat are a lot better than a lot of people think, at least through the first two rounds. My only issue is obviously they're in their path to the playoffs. I know that you can only beat who's in front of you, but the Heat, the Sixers, and the Hawks are not exactly known for their defense, whereas Boston's been a top five defense, you know, since January, and they might be the best defense left in the playoffs. I think whoever wins this series is going to really determine who was the best defensive team after all. I think it's going to be a slobber knocker, 90s type game, very physical. I think the Celtics are going to have to continue to make their threes because they've been making a lot of them in the first two rounds. Let's not ignore that. They've definitely been red hot. And I think Miami's half court offense, as I've mentioned, you know, through the first two rounds, they're going to have to continue to be on point. This is going to be a great test to me for Jimmy Butler, Dan. If he and the Heat can knock out the team that beat the Nets and the Bucks, I mean, that would definitely say a lot about them going into the finals if they were able to pull it off in seven, like you're predicting.
You know what's crazy is that there was a stat showing Jason Tatum and Jimmy Butler's overall statistics side by side for the playoffs. And the crazy thing is that Jimmy Butler or Jason Tatum's getting superstar status. He's getting top 10 player accolades being thrown his way. But Jimmy Butler isn't in any of those conversations. This goes back to your point. The Heat are definitely getting slept on. I mean, the Vegas odds are already way in favor of the Celtics and not even a game has been played. This is where Miami thrives. This is what they like. Again, I think that you and I are, you know, we're not the general public. We definitely see it being much closer than what other people are predicting. But I think that that's just more fuel to the fire for the Heat.
Yeah, I think the Celtics are going to have to win one of the first two games of the series, Dan. I think they have to either win game one or game two. I think they have to go into Boston with at least a split, because I think once you get into the 2-2, to ask you to win two of the last three, I think it's a difficult task. So I think they need to come out hot. And obviously with the news about Horford and Marcus Smart, it's not great for them. Definitely a nice little break for Miami there, no question about it, but they still have to capitalize. I think they will. I think they win game one. I think obviously the Heat have been off since Thursday, whereas the Celtics just went through a grueling game seven, but they definitely just played Sunday afternoon and then had to fly to Miami. Yeah, it was intense for the first, you know, three quarters, I'd say. Then it kind of got blown out. But I think that Miami still definitely has the advantage. They have home court, which I think is going to matter. But I feel like the Celtics, it feels like it's their year. I don't know. It's weird.
That's how I feel about the Heat, man. As crazy as it sounds, it just feels like the Heat had a good roster. I told you heading into the season, I liked our odds a lot more than last year for this exact reason. But yeah, regardless, I think that any basketball fan is going to be excited and just hyped to watch the series play out. Definitely no one had this on their bingo cards. No one predicted these conference finals. Yet here we are, Heat versus Celtics, rematch of the 2020 bubble, and the Golden State Warriors versus the Mavs. So definitely exciting times, man.
I was actually going to ask you, wouldn't it be interesting if it was the Heat and Mavericks to play their third finals matchup? I think that'd be kind of wild.
Yeah, I didn't even think that far ahead, but that would be wild. I mean, I don't think that the Heat ever played the Golden State Warriors in the finals, nor has the Celtics played the Warriors in the finals. So either way, like, it's going to be really interesting. But Mavs versus Heat, there's definitely some bad blood there.
Yeah. And it's interesting, Dan. One of the points that I was thinking about is, of all these teams that are left, a lot of them have made it to the conference finals recently, if you think about it, or have a pretty good track record, at least in the last decade, like Heat, Mavs, Celtics, Warriors, like all these teams have been in the conference finals quite a bit over the last like 10 years.
I think that the team with the longest stretch that hasn't made the finals is actually the Celtics, and that goes back to 2010.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these teams have shown that they've just maintained competitive in the last decade, which is really a testament to their organizations as a whole.
They've been close, man, but this Tatum Brown core has been close before. I would say my question is, you know, if they're unable to make it to the finals, would this playoff run be a disappointment? Because I think it would. Like, I think you look back at those sweep over the Nets, it's impressive on its face. You look at the net beating the Bucks without Middleton. I mean, obviously still a solid, you give them respect. But if they don't end up even making it to the finals, I think you're going to look back as this is just another year where they couldn't get to the finish line.
Yeah, and it definitely harps back on the point of what more do they need to do at that point. You know what I mean? Like, what missing piece would there be for them left?
Agreed.
All right, Brian. So we covered basically the rest of the playoffs. Let's touch base on, you know, some of those hot topics that you had on mind.
Yeah, so obviously, guys, I know we tweeted about it a couple of times over the last couple of days. Patrick Beverley, he made quite an appearance on First Take, just really just absolutely ripping into CP3, talked a ton of shit. A lot of Dame Lillard was not happy with it. Kevin Durant also commented basically saying, like, role players shouldn't be talking like starters and all-stars. It's created a lot of controversy. I wanted to just get your general thoughts because I thought it was a fun topic. I actually, while I understand where everybody's coming from, my perspective is I actually get where Pat Bev is coming from. I know some of the stuff he said was probably a little too personal, like calling CP3 a cone defensively. I mean, I know he's aged, but I don't think he's that bad to that level. But to me, man, the thing that I think Pat Bev is really targeting is he's thinking about, what am I going to do after basketball? And to me, it kind of seems like it was an audition for TNT and ESPN to show, hey, look, I can get viewers, I can get likes, I can get my name out there. And it definitely worked because people were talking about it. And putting him with JJ Redick, I think people have been craving to hear the athlete's perspective and the players giving you kind of more of the inside scoop instead of just hearing it from the media.
Yo, what worries me about his tapes is, like, yeah, we know he's very insightful, like, with his basketball acumen, and just obviously he's played the game, so he gets it. But it's really concerning, like, we're talking about Pat Bev for the wrong reasons. We're not talking about his like, basketball acumen, his knowledge of the game, or his take on how it played out. We're talking about him because he crossed the line, in my opinion, with CP3. So, like, that's where I would be cautious of his approach to go into media and TV, but hey, like, that, I guess that sells and people are going to enjoy it. I mean, look at Mad Dog Russo, for God's sakes.
I think people want honesty though, Dan. Like, he was, look, I would say I agree. You can't really take his CP3 take, guys, I would obviously take with a grain of salt, but you can't fault him. Like, he was being, I guess, very honest in his approach.
He wasn't being honest to himself, bro. Like, for him to be saying that CP3 was a cone out there and he should have been subbed out, like, he was, you cannot tell me that he was being honest to himself at that point. He knows that CP3 was having a bad game, but you leave him in because it's CP3, for God's sakes. Yeah. Like, I don't think that he was being genuine in certain parts. I think he was trying to make more of a statement than anything else. But I enjoyed, like, the rest of everything he had to say. I mean, pretty insightful. He definitely takes a player's perspective, as he should. But again, he's definitely rough around the edges at the end of the day, and would have to work a couple things out, as most of us do as we're transitioning to a new role, right? Yeah. But yeah, like, I would like to see him back definitely as a guest host, but maybe take not take 2 days worth of content. It's a little bit too much.
It was a lot. He should be a once a week special guest, give you some thoughts on some games and go from there. Oh man, no, I thought that was fascinating. It was entertaining television to watch, and obviously,
I mean, he said you give James Harden a super max.
Yeah, that felt like hey, I'm gonna help my buddy out on television. Yeah.
That, like, because of what he's accomplished, like, that's not an honest take, bro. Like, listen,
I'm not saying I agree with his take. I'm just saying it was refreshing to hear someone throwing out some crazy ideas, because that's what that was. James Harden Supermax crazy idea.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely clickbaity to the nth degree, bro.
Oh yeah. And then lastly, obviously, guys, the NBA draft lottery is tonight. I think by the time this episode airs, the lottery will have already happened. But I did want to just go over just a quick couple of or I guess one main proposal of what could happen tonight that I think would be just a really interesting storyline, Dan. I wanted to get your thoughts. What if New Orleans Pelicans get the number one pick in the draft? The same pick that the New Orleans Pelicans got from the LA Lakers. Imagine the fallout from everybody if the Lakers could have gotten the number one pick this year. And then obviously you add to the fact that New Orleans has been really scary in the sense of like they're definitely taking steps in the right direction with the CJ McCollum trade. You add a returning Zion next year and a number one draft pick. I mean, that would be a pretty scary core over there in New Orleans if that were to happen.
I would trade that pick if I were New Orleans.
Really? What do you think you could get, or what would you target?
I don't know. I don't think that they need youth at this point. You get what I mean? I think that they have enough youth. Or it's one of two things. Either you trade the pick or you trade Zion. Like, it's one of those two things. Mm-hmm. Just given you have too much youth and you need to, like, at a certain point in time, you need to have an identity. For as much as, like, as many pieces as they have, as much capital as they've gained, they don't really have an identity to them. They don't have, like, you know, something to hang their hats on, so to speak. So if I'm New Orleans, like, that's what I'm focused on.
Yeah. I mean, right now, judging by the looks of it, I think they have the eighth best odds for tonight. So we'll see if that ends up happening for the Pelicans. But I just think that would be a really interesting storyline to kind of fall out. So it'll be interesting to see if that ends up happening. And then lastly, just an excuse to talk about my New York Knicks and their absolutely terrible luck with these draft lotteries. It does look like New Yorkers will be suffering again this year. The Knicks have the 11th best odds. So does not look great to get a top four pick. Pretty much I'm expecting, Dan, as most years, the Knicks are either going to stay in place, or it wouldn't surprise me if they fell down to 12. But I'm still going to do, you know, big prayer circle and hope that somehow the Knicks shock the world and get a top four pick for once in my lifetime.
What do you mean for once in your lifetime?
For once that we move up in the draft, because, you know, we haven't moved up since Patrick Ewing. That's a long time. You've had teams like Cleveland jump and all these other teams, and like the Knicks consistently either stay or fall back.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the closest you guys have gone as of late is your boy Maple Barrett.
Yeah, Broadway Barrett. I still think he's going to have a really good season next year, Dan. Just got to trade Julius Randle, that's all.
We will get to that when we get to that.
I know. I'm not ready yet. We still have NBA playoffs to digest before we talk some Knicks basketball. I know there's a lot of New Yorkers out there that are hungry to see them, you know, hopefully make the playoffs again next year.
All right. Well, let's wait and find out, guys. But that about wraps it up for us. So you guys got our conference finals previews and takes on who we think is going to make it. And we will be back later this week just to recap some of the action that we will witness in the week. So until next time, guys, make sure to keep interacting with us on social. We love the engagement. We love the takes that you guys provide for us. And keep it easy.